हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय। सो श्रीमद् भागवतम फर्स्ट कैंटो ऑन वर्स 1 देन वी आर कंटिन्यूइंग दैट वी हैव श्रील विश्वनाथ चक्रवर्ती कमेंट्स ऑन द फर्स्ट वर्स एंड सो देन इन द थर्ड पैराग्राफ और The word anvaya, meaning inclusion or entrance into, can also indicate that the Lord is the cause and destruction, janmadi, because everything enters the Lord. The universes enter into the Lord at destruction and issues from him at the time of creation. Right? So that's the thing in anvaya, because you have the aspect of that, if you're studying also, is like grammatically, then the anvaya is that how the words, what you can, how the connection between the words, how what is coming from what is expanding from what, and all these things. So you can see an analysis. So here we see is that that comes from originally from inclusion or entrance into. How do, one is how, one, how do you enter into the understanding of what the verse is saying and what is included in that? But here, but that comes because everything is expanding from the Lord, and we see in the material that after destruction, everything enters back into the Lord. Right? So it does all these things. That's the wonderful thing about Sanskrit, is that all the different words, then because of their roots and their connections, then they indicate different elements or that going on. And so these different elements going on, then they're consistent, right? There'll be a circle of elements that are there in the meeting, and then according to the context, and you can see which is what appropriately matches, right? So that's the point, is you have to see what's the context of what's going on. So we're talking about the position of the Lord and his sovereignty, and so then naturally then it will be meaning. This will be the meaning like that. Itarata then indicates divisions of matter taking place at the level of secondary creation outside the Lord. That means that the Lord is the basis, adishtatri karana, of the whole universe. Just as water is the basis of earth and fire is the basis of water, thus the Lord is that person from whom creation, maintenance, and destruction takes place, because everything is contained within him, anvayat. And everything in the secondary creation is outside him, but based on him, itarata. Right? So it's everything's contained with him. Anvayat means that he's the connection of everything. At the same time as those things that are secondary, they're based on him. And so, but it's outside of him, like Krishna is saying in the Chatur-Shloki. The first verse, he says he is everything. And everything of value is him, and if you don't see it in context of him, it's illusion. So that means all situations and all desires, actions, results, and experiences that you get. In other words, the sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana that are there, the mechanical aspects, then those are all controlled by him, based on him, controlled by him. So that'll be this itarataha. But at the same time, is he is as a person is beyond all that, because he has how he is seeing, and how what are his desires in working with his energies. In other words, the energies are expanded so that for the interaction with him, it's his energy. And then so yeah. And so for those living entities that don't want to acknowledge Krishna's position and that, then the material world then becomes the place in which they can interact with the mechanics of an existence of Krishna's creation, but without seeing Krishna, even though everything's running based on Krishna, just they don't see. They can't see. Because they're not acknowledging that it's all coming from him, right? Or the word anvaya, meaning sequence, can mean that the Lord is creation and destruction, janmadi, because he is the whole sequence of creation, maintenance, and destruction. The Lord enters into the universe as the final agent of causality in the process of creation. He enters the universe as the final agent for dispensing results of action and maintenance. And he enters the universe in the form of Shiva as the final agent in the process of destruction. Right? Because so it's going to be a sequence, means whenever something happens, like we have Sambandha Abhideya Prayojan, it's a sequence. Right? So whenever you have the creation, then the creation is there, then naturally all those potencies having that potent being potent then can act. And so in that potency, then when that's applied, then we get effect, right? So if you apply them, right, in other words, the potency is there, we address that potency and interact with it, then that gives a result. There's a transformation, right? I have something, and then one is able to interact with that, but the interaction itself isn't causing the transformation. It's the Lord's potencies that cause it, you know, because I go and turn on the light switch, right? The bulb is existing. The switch is existing. The current, is, I mean, the, what do you call it? The wire is existing. My finger is existing, you know, my feet to get me over to there, you know, that the hand that's connected to the wrist, you know, arm that's connected to the elbow, that's connected to the upper arm, that's connected to the shoulder, that connect like this, it all is existing. But then when I apply that, then there's a transformation. I move from where I am over to where the switch is. I push the switch and the light goes on. But what's actually happening is there's potency there that by my desire, I would like to move over there. So then the Lord, that as Paramatma controlling the external energy, then the external energy does the transformation that instead of being sitting where I am, now I'm over next to the switch. But I don't actually get myself over there by the Lord, by Paramatma's sanction and Maya Devi's transformation, it happens, right? Then you're going to have the point of the switch. I move the switch, but I'm not the one causing the electricity to flow and all those different things like that. Right? It's that's by the Lord's arrangement that electricity can flow through the wire, right? Like water can flow through a pipe, but only down. But electricity can flow through a wire up. Right, the switch is on the wall, the light's on the ceiling. Right, so it's Krishna's potency that allows that to happen. Right, and then by Krishna's potency, then the electricity can go there, and by however arrangements are there, then it can be transformed into light, you know, that we can perceive. Right, because otherwise, electricity is light. We see lightning is light, it's lightning. Right, it's not called, you know, how you say apple juice ning or something, you know, it's called lightning because it's light, right? And so then all that's arranged by Krishna, so there's a sequence to it, and he is the cause of its existence, of its ability to be transformed, and then its transformation, right? And then we see the final, you know, because you're talking about the material, so there's creation, maintenance, and destruction, then it can be destroyed. So the point is at every point, it's him. He's the one involved. He's the one that is actually making it happening. But at the same time, as you know, as we'll see as it comes up, he, as the person who is controlling all this, then for him, it's not an endeavor. Just by his will, it's going on. Right? It's just... you know, a drop of his energy is running the whole material creation, right? The predominance of the energy is being manifest in the spiritual world, where it's, you know, and the manifestation is so much more wonderful, and it's eternal, right? Like that, it actually gives the happiness because it's being used in Krishna's service. But here, we're using it separately from Krishna, so then it gets all these interesting temporary manifestations where sometimes you see it manifest, sometimes it's not. You know, it manifests in one way, then it changes, and this and that. So in its change and all that, it's following the patterns given by Krishna, how creation, maintenance, and destruction will happen. But at the same time, it's following then, you know, what's going to work in the material world according to the endeavor of the living entities. Well, in the spiritual world, then by the endeavor of the living entities, they're trying to make a wonderful situation for Krishna. Right? Okay. So, therefore, he is the final agent of causality, right? So, immediately there's us, I go and do something, I move something. And that, and then by me moving it, the material energy transforms. But that ability, that electricity can do what it does, and the body can do what it does, that's the formal cause. That's before that. That is what's there before the internal potency transforms as the external, right? So then there's Krishna. He's the final. So Krishna, by his desire, then you have what would be the, let's say, in this case, the material manifestation. So the potency of that and how it works is Krishna. Now that potency and its working according to Krishna's desire, the internal potency, then that is the you know, after Krishna, that's the second, that's the one closer to us, right? So that's the second aspect of causality. Krishna is the original. So that's called, that's the original cause. This is the formal cause. Then you have us as the efficient cause, that we want to work with this material energy in a particular way. And then you have, the cookie man appeared. And then you have the transformation by the material cause, by the material energy. So Krishna controls his internal potency. The internal potency is transformed as the external. So we try to work with, we want to do something in the external energy, and the external energy by Krishna's sanction transforms. It's not because I want it to happen, it's doing. It's by Krishna's sanction, and then the material energy will transform. Does that make sense? So you have Krishna's desire, then that's the first point. Then his expansion is the internal potency, that's the second point. The external potency then transforming, the internal transforming is the external potency, that's the third point. Right? Then there's us and our desire to transform the external energy. So if it's within our karma, right? Paramatma sanctions, and then we act and the energy transforms. If it's not within our karma, it won't act. Like you see, so many people are trying to do something. Somebody's opening so many businesses, none of them make money. Somebody's making so many endeavors, nothing happens. Well, someone else, he just sneezes and he's got, you know, this multinational, you know, company like that. So it's just, it's according to the karma, you know, and Krishna's control. He's the final. But in devotional service, then it's we desire to do that for Krishna. And then, you know, if we have the proper consciousness and everything, then Krishna sanctions, then the internal potency then will transform that external potency and then it will work. So in either case, whether we're working on the material platform or we're working on the spiritual platform, it's still always going to be Krishna is the final cause, because he's the origin of everything that we're working with, including us, right? So he being the origin of us and he being the origin of the internal potency, that internal potency being, you know, transformed as the external potency, as the shadow, then you know, all that's connected with him. So he's the basis of everything. So there's nothing that's there that's not included in him or controlled by him. Right? In this explanation, it should be understood that the cause includes within itself the effect. And the Lord, as cause, enters into the effect, the universe, right? Just like you have, let's say you have flour, right? Like you have some wheat flour, bread flour, like dai ho, dai ni tai. You have some bread flour. Now that can be transformed into dough. And then that can be transformed through heat into bread. Right? And so, what do you call it? Yeah, so therefore the nature of flour is in the dough. The nature of bread is in the dough, right? You know, so I'm saying you have flour, it can become bread. But, you know, it becomes dough, then it becomes bread. But it can't do something that's not in the nature of the flour. Does that make sense? You know, or the typical example, you have clay. Clay can be made into a pot, but the pot still has the nature of clay. And clay inherently has in it the potency to become a pot, right? So it's inherent. That's what he calls it. In this explanation, it should be understood that the cause includes within itself the effect. So the clay includes in its nature the ability to be made into a pot and function as a pot. It means if it's not in the nature, it's not there. Just like in the clay, you don't have, let's say, the nature to, I don't know what it means. Means like, let's say for us, it's not food, right? But let's like fish, they spend all day rooting around in the riverbed in the clay and eating stuff, right? So it has to have the nature of it in there. So it means I can't take water and make it into a pot, right? It's not the nature of water to become a pot. Now one could say that, if we have ice, then I think, I'm not sure where it is, if it's in Norway or something way up north, every winter they have a hotel there that they carve out of ice. The whole thing is ice. Everything's ice. You know, the hotel itself is built out of blocks of ice. Your bed is ice. You know, the floors are ice. You know, all the utensils that you eat out of are all ice. Everything's ice like that. And, you know, you can say as no, but there, but the point is it's temporary. It's not the natural position, right? So the point is that means it's an exception. In the Vedic, it's always understood. In the Vedic understanding of logic, the exception proves the rule, because only in that particular situation, then you can say, oh, it doesn't work. But in the normal sense, it does, right? In the modern academy, if there is an exception, they take that, they take it their perspective that breaks the rule, so the rule doesn't count, even though the rule's going on every day, day in, day out, despite their saying the rule doesn't apply. Right? So that's why in the Vedic, the exception establishes the rule, because other than when ice is frozen, it can't do that. So it doesn't break the rule. It just establishes the rule that yes, water doesn't do that. Does that make sense? So that's much of the time what we see is that if someone says something and we're clever, you know, we use our intelligence and then we go through all the possibilities and then we find one that doesn't match what's just been said. Right? And so then we'll say, yes, but it doesn't, you know, like this, it doesn't work. But they've just proven that is the point, because other than that one rare thing, it doesn't work. Does that make sense? So that's you could say is one of the major differences between the Vedic Academy and the modern academy, or the mundane academies. The Vedic is a descending process, so the absolute and the principles always apply, And then on the details, you can get some exceptions, but they don't change the principle. While in the inductive, then it starts with the details that are there. I know a few details. I make my theory. I find new details that would expand it, or it's different, because there's always different varieties of how you apply something. And so now they have to either come up with different schools within that. There's the clay pot, vadis, and then there's the copper pot vadis, the stainless steel pot vadis, the ceramic pot vadis, the aluminum pot vadis. And each one of them says that only their pot works and all other pots are bogus. But someone who actually understands, the top down, the principle of a pot understands, no, you can make pots out of all these, but depending upon what you're doing, you would use a specific pot. Like if I want to keep water in it for drinking and it's summertime, I want to keep it cool, I use a clay pot. I don't use another pot. If I'm looking for the benefits I'll get, for in health and all that, then I'm going to keep the water in the copper pot because that then, makes adjustments in it. It purifies, it kills all the bacteria and makes it very good for the liver and other things like that. It's very purifying. If I'm going to, you understand what I'm saying? If it's just like this is the different pots have the thing. So if you understand the principle of pot, then you understand all pots. And if you only understand the details, then they simply fight with each other over what's an actual pot. Like the clay pot and the copper pot. So they'll say, your pot's not a pot because if I come up and hit it with a brick, then there's no pot. So therefore, the copper pot is the real pot. Right? And then the guy with the steel pot comes along and goes, yeah, but if I take a brick and I hit your copper pot, it becomes crushed. So it's not, instead of holding 20 liters, now it only holds three, like that. So therefore, the steel pot's the real pot. Everybody's got their angle on what's going on. So that's why we have to take Krishna's angle. Because then, by looking at it from Krishna's angle, then we actually see. Other things we're only partially seeing, so it's not complete. We may see something, but it's incomplete, so we don't see the whole picture. It's just like when it comes to a meal, the children see the fried things and the sweets, right? They don't see the rest of the meal, right? But for them, it's a complete meal, right? So, but for the in the parent's mind, no, you have to eat all the things that are there, like that. Does that make sense? So this candy is green and the spinach is green, so they're both green, so I'll take the candy green, the green candy, right? No, yeah, okay. Thus, the Lord is identified as creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe. The universe itself is kept at a distance from the swarup of the Lord by the use of this descriptive word itaraha. Different. Itarataha. Different. Since the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe is different from the Lord's swarup Shakti, right? Because we mentioned before, he's the original cause. The internal potency, the swarup Shakti, is the formal cause. That transform becomes the material cause. And then we, as the conditioned jivas, we're the efficient cause. So that interaction of us as the efficient cause with the material cause, that's separate from the Lord's Swarup Shakti, because he's non-different from that. Because then, cause and effect means your what do you call it? The Shaktiman and the Shakti are non-different. You can tell the difference, but they're non-different. They go together. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur uses the term moiti. Moiti means two parts of one, two halves of one thing. Does that make sense? They go together. Without the two, it doesn't work. Like, let's say you have the blender, the body, that plastic, clear plastic. And then on the bottom, you have that thing that screws on and off that's got the blades in it. Those two go together, right? If I put the bottom into the machine and then I pour some liquid on top and then push the button, nothing's, all that's going to happen is whatever is there is going to splatter around the room. Or if I take the plastic thing and put it there, but don't put the bottom thing, a liquid will go out the bottom and nothing will happen. You have to put the two together. So that's called a moiety. So therefore, Krishna and his energy are non-different because he contains the energy. He may sometimes expand the energy. But the point is he's the original cause. But the material and the efficient, meaning the conditioned jivas with the external energy, that's separate from him and his pastimes with the internal potency. But still, he's the original cause. Yes? Jai. Looks like Jagannath is back. Okay. Yes, question.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I just a quick question regarding efficient cause, because I was looking in the area now. Efficient means like when one is quick and in doing certain activities, but I don't think that has to do with this efficient cause, maybe.
Yeah. No, it does. Like, let's say you have a language, right? And in the language, it has words for something that is generally functioning within that system, right? Let's say, like, for example, I've heard it said that in Irish Gaelic, it might be in the other Gaelics also, but in Irish Gaelic, that they have 40 words for the different shades of green that you find in nature, right? So that's all part of when they're farming and all that, depending how green it is. Just like, let's say you plant the plant and the seedling comes up, it's got a little green in it, but the green that's in there, it's mostly white with a little green, you know? Does that make sense? You know, so they have 40 shades of green in their language. Does any other language have those 40 shades of green? Like that? I wouldn't go into it and get it absorbed in it and try to make it into a movie. But point is, you know, you don't have those words, right? We can say light green, dark green. You know, there may be a few other things. I think chartreuse might be a kind of green or different things like that. But the point is you don't have, or puce maybe or something. I don't know. There's some funny words. But they don't have 40 words to do with everything. You can go out in nature. And, you know, like when you look at a field, the whole field's green, but each plant is a different color of a green. Right? So therefore, in English, it's not, it does quite well. Like someone was pointing out that it has the ability to be quite poetic, kind of like Sanskrit. It has that ability. You can use words in very unique ways and avoid the proper grammar in poetics and get some very nice poetry. But as far as exact definitions and all that, then English isn't known for having that exactness. If there is any more exactness, you might, in philosophy and that, you'll probably find that coming from the Latin that would be there from, you know, it would be, you know, 1,000 or 2,000-year-old words that the Christians have used, you know, based on Latin, that they might have some kind of definition. So the problem is in modern English, you don't have so many. So efficient means, you know, what gets something done, right? He say someone's efficient, they get it done. Whether it's quick or not, that's another thing, but they're the ones getting it done, because sometimes you do something, it doesn't, it's not efficient in that way in time, but it may be efficient that they got it done. Like the first time I cooked khichdi, you know, I was in the kitchen told, go cook khichdi. You know, you have rice and dal, you cook it together. I'm not sure if you even put any potatoes or anything in it. I'm cooking enough for three people, right? You know, it's about this much, right? Took me 3 hours. So by that definition of efficient meaning time, that was not efficient. But efficient meaning that by the endeavor, you took the rice, the dal, the water, and whatever else you put in there, it did transform into khichdi. that way it's efficient. So efficient here means the jiva, that they're the efficient cause because they want to get something done. And so by their desire, the super soul approving that, then material nature transforms. My point before was that we don't make it transform. We simply have the desire that it transforms, and we take part in the mechanics of it in whatever capacity we have, but we don't actually, just like you can put the potatoes in the water, in the pot, on the fire, turn on the fire. But the point is you don't actually cook the potatoes. You don't actually heat the water. The fire does that. The potency in fire, you means you've taken another fire and lit it. You can say, well, I lit the fire, but you lit it with fire. So that means you had something that itself produces the fire. You can say, well, I did that. No, the phosphorus against the other things that did that, or the wood did that, because they have the potency to do that. We don't have the potency to do that, right? Does that make sense? Yeah, you know, so the point is here is efficient means we're the ones that engage in the activity that is the first part of the transformation. Right. The second part is the material energy, means what we're trying to get is the material energy to exchange. But that is coming because Super Soul, as the primary, the first, then he then gives sanctions. So then the internal potency, then as the transfer external potency, then deals. What's wrong with the meeting that we're in is not good? We have to change meetings now?
Sorry, Maharaj. It will end, Maharaj, because it was a personal account, Zoom account. It goes for only 40 minutes. In case we want to extend, then we may have to join the new thing.
Okay. Why? How many more minutes do we have before it ends?
2 minutes, Maharaj.
This is classic. I see. Okay. Does that make sense, Mataji? So, in other words, these are the terms that Srila Prabhupada is using. Because we don't, you know, you don't have the Sanskrit term. So you have to find something in English that's basically there. So you do find it in I think it was who, I think Aristotelian, the reasoning there, or the, you know, logical points. And in his causality, it has four parts. But he doesn't take it all the way back to Krishna. He break down some of these other parts, you know. In other words, he tries to fit all four into these two. So he'll take the maybe two parts of efficient and two parts of material. But you know, the four stages he doesn't get. So you might be able to use some of his words, but then you also then have to come up with some other things. Also, they might have difference. They might say, I wanted to turn on the light, so I'm the original cause. No. The point is that there is a principle of light, and it's something, and there's electricity, and there's all the mechanics that make it work. You have your body. It can move and function. All that is coming from Krishna, that it has the potency, that the potency is manifest for you to do that. That's the formal cause, right? Now, that means that's the primary creation. The secondary creation, which we said is the external, that is outside, you know, that we can, that it's the transformation of the internal is the external potency. That will be the material cause, because unless it's the potency is there in the material cause, you can't do anything with it. You're the efficient cause because it's through us being involved that we see the change in the manifestation. But otherwise, you know, the material energy doesn't need to turn on the light. The light bulb couldn't care less if you never put it plug it into a socket and turn it on. It really doesn't care. It's not that all those boxes of light bulbs sitting down in the store are all sitting there lamenting, oh, when will we be taken and you know, plugged in, and then we can show our glory and show our, no. Material energy really couldn't care less about transforming at all, right? Because it's unconscious. So that's why then it's only through the conscious that things go. We're conscious, so how can we have an effect on unconscious? It's because that unconscious pervaded by higher consciousness. And that is coming from the Lord. So the Lord, through his internal potency, then transferring his external potency, we can deal with that. That's the four stages. Does that make sense?
Yes, Maharaj. So it has to do with the, I just wanted to follow a question here about is the jiva then, why he's the efficient cause? Is it because of his desire mainly?
Yeah, because that, well, is there anything else?
Actually not.
You have 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. How big is your body compared to that? It's like I don't know, billions of times bigger. So how does it move? How does it do all the things that it does? See, is that we have to appreciate is that Krishna has his desire, how he likes to do things, who he is. So his original form then, is a form like what we would call a human-like form. So therefore, that there are legs and feet and arms and noses and ears and hair and all that, that's Krishna. That's what he looks like. And so then in his expansion of the creation, then you have the human beings that have those basic qualities, but then, there'll be some variation in like the demigods, they may have yogic powers so they can fly around or, different things like that, or in the spiritual world or like that, or they may have four arms, but the point is that they these are all coming from Krishna. And so the manifestation of it that we see is through his internal potency. Right, so his energy then manifests, Krishna's form that's suitable for the situation. Right, so like Krishna, Prabhupada said, Krishna, for us and our environment and size, then he's 5'10". I'm not sure what that translates into in centimeters, but the point is, it'll be what. 175. So it'll be like 175. Like that. Difference between inches and the centimeters, that's a little bit different, but whatever, it's like 175. So it's like the perfect height. It's not short, it's not tall. Like above 175, it's considered tall. Below that, you're considered short. Why? Because Krishna's the standard. We don't know that. People don't know that. They just know that 5'10 is like a very good height, right? Because if you're taller than that, they'll say you're tall. Someone might like tall, like the person who's organizing a basketball team is looking for people that are much taller than that, right? But the point is he'll say this guy is, a good height. But the point is that he's it's for a particular criteria. But if we just take just height, we'll say above 175 is tall, right? Unless, of course, you're a pygmy in Africa, and then anything above, how you say 90 centimeters is tall, right? Point being is that he's the origin of everything. It's by his desire that it's this way. Then his internal potency is the manifestation of that. He is the, that whatever the quality of something, but the manifestation of that quality is his internal potency. Now we're in the material world, so we don't see the internal potency. So the external potency is the transformation of that internal potency. So it looks the same and basically functions the same, though how much the potencies are manifested in that are maybe varying, but it's the same basic principle, right? So therefore, we walk in the same way that Krishna and the gopis are walking. right? The cowherd boys are walking. Cows there in the spiritual world and cows here walk in the same way. You know, monkeys hang out in the tree, birds fly, fish live in the water, water runs, you know, like the Jamuna, because that's how the internal potency runs, which is a manifestation of Krishna in that form, right? Right? So it's always going to be that same element, but it's just the transformation. Now, we can, so the potency is already there, right? So the principle of cooking is already there, whether we're involved in it or not. It's not that only because I cook, then cooking exists. No, it's cooking exists whether we manifest it or not. The principle is there, right? So the principle is there in its transformed element as the material cause, but that's based on that's the secondary creation. The primary creation is then the formal cause, which is the internal potency, right? Then that internal potency is based on Krishna, who he is Krishna cooking, right? You know, just like he is rasa, he is existence, he is tattva, he is, you know, whatever is there, it's him. Then it's manifest as the internal, that transforms as the external, and then we can be involved in it. So therefore, we can't do anything with the external energy that the internal potency in Krishna don't allow. That's why people take years or, you know, generations or centuries or millennia to figure out something about how the material energy works. And then when they finally figure that out, you know, then you were saying, oh, he invented this. But it was always there. So that's why in the modern science, they can't understand how there could have been civilizations thousands of years ago or tens of thousands of years ago that had technology that they can't do today. You know, like you see is that, you know, an example would be, you know, you have like, I think the maybe the Sumerian, but, you know, in Egypt, definitely. Then down in Central America, the Mayans, and then down in South America, the Incas, what they do building, they have these blocks of stone that may weigh tens or hundreds of tons, but they're so perfectly cut that they match together with another one that you don't need any mortar. There's no cement. You can't even stick a razor blade into some of it. So it's so perfectly aligned. And that's, you know, of course we're going to go, okay, that's the straight ones, but they have ones where they just pick up a stone and whatever it is, cut it to be nice and then cut the next one, you know, that's got a curve like that. And then it's got a curve that's perfectly matched. So no one has the technology to do that today. They can say whatever they want. They can't move that 60 or 100 ton stone, cut it that perfectly, fit it in place, and then build a whole pyramid out of it. They do not have the ability. They'll say, yeah, we could do it. No, not one of them can do it. So therefore, then they'll say is something, you know, it's not like that, or, you know, they'll come up with some way that to make it look like it's primitive. But at the same time, is it so beyond their own technology? I think there's this crystal, a made out of crystal carved skull, not so big, like this big. And it doesn't have one mark in it of carving. It's so perfectly smooth. It has no marks. So they can't understand how it was made. They have no ability to make that today. So that's the thing, is there's technologies that even, you know, some hundreds of years ago they had, or 1,000 years ago, let alone these ones, 10,000, that they can't do. So this throws them off because they think we invented it, therefore we can do it. But the point is no, the principle is there. Krishna in his energy, internal potency, then in manifest, and the secondary is the external potency. Now the jiva can work with that accordingly. So if you follow the principles of cooking, you get something cooked. You don't follow the principle, it won't work. If I keep the potato, keep it on the counter and don't peel it or anything and just say, boil, nothing's going to happen. Right? It's not going to, it won't happen. It won't change. It won't transform. You leave it there long enough, come back after a year, yeah, and it's grown into a plant or something, you know, or a rat's come in and eaten it, you know, or the cat's come along and knocked it off the counter onto the floor, you know, so like that. But it's we're taking it because I'm doing it. That's the problem. That's why Krishna's mentioned in the Gita. Never think you're the doer. You can take part as the instrument. We're always the instrument, or an instrument, not the instrument. We're an instrument. So therefore, if we understand that, then it's just a matter of when Krishna, as his modes of nature, then manifest the intelligence to understand how to work with the potency, then people know how to work with it. And when he withdraws that, then no one knows how it works. It's that simple. But because of our false ego that we want to be God, we don't want to include God in this. Therefore, you find many of the scientists and all that, they're so atheistic. They're totally against, you know, because if they're real scientists, it's there or not, you know. You know, so if I talk about some imaginary creature, you know, doing something, you know, like let's say dragons, do the scientists care about dragons? No, they say they don't exist, so they don't talk about it. Do you ever hear scientists talking about dragons? Generally not. But they always are talking about God, how he's not the one doing it. We're doing it. It's us. We figured it out. There's no God. So that means there is substance there, because otherwise, if it was imaginary, why would they talk about it? So they say it doesn't happen, but they're always talking. So the point comes down is that Krishna is the origin of everything, and then he manifests the Swarup Shakti that transforms as the external energy, and then we as the jivas can either take part in as instruments in the internal potency and pastimes of Krishna, or we can take part, you know, with the external potency and the pastimes of, you know, how the material world, you know, manifests. So that's basically what we're dealing with here. There is nothing more like that. So it comes down to just that. So it's these four, and it's just a matter of seeing there's the original and the expansion or the external energy. So like that, then you're trying to see. But because modern knowledge, they only work within the material energy. They don't know about these principles, right? So then they just speculate. So then they'll try to work out how they're figuring it out, how they're doing it. Does that make any sense, or?
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the whole idea, is we're getting back to the point, is there is nothing other than Krishna. And so therefore, whatever we see how does it work in context of Krishna. And if that's appreciated, then we can always be engaged in Krishna's service. If not, even if it's anything, like Krishna says, whatever you value, because there's unlimited things that are here, but we only interact with the ones we have a value for, right? And so that's fine, because that's what we have the nature for. So our body, our senses, our mind, our intelligence then can function within a particular range or manifestation of material energy. So if we work in that, it's complete. Like people say, it's my world, because that's all you see anyway. That's all you can deal with. So in your world, if you can see all of those elements as its connection to Krishna and how to use it for Krishna for his pleasure, that's perfect. That's what you want to do. When you're dealing, you know, that's how religion works. It's coming from Krishna. How does it relate to Krishna? In other words, religion is, what is the nature of, you know, what we're dealing with here in the interaction between the external energy and, you know, one aspect of external energy with another. And at the same time, as that is based on the internal potency and on Krishna. So since we're using it for Krishna, that means the principle is coming from his internal potency. That's then reflected into the external potency. That's why it works that way. So that means in the internal potency, it works in that particular way. That's because that's how Krishna wants it to work. Water is wet. That's the way Krishna likes it. Otherwise, what's the meaning of going into the Jamuna in the night with the gopis and splashing water? If water isn't wet, if it's not cool, if it doesn't have the ability to be splashed, you know, and it doesn't do it, it just splices and it'll dry. It's not like, you know, juice of beetroots or something. You splash that all over, everything's red for eternity, you know. So therefore, water is just water. You know, earth is earth. You can walk on it. Trees grow out of it. You know, grass grows, cowsy grass. You know, so it's how Krishna wants it. So that means is whatever you see here, the principles on which it functions in the nature of what it is, originally are there to please Krishna. Here we want to be Krishna, so we get the same kind of facilities, not quite as good quality. But the point is that it's natural, it can be engaged in Krishna's service because the wall is there because there's walls in Vrindavan. There's walls in Vaikuntha. So a wall here does what a wall does there. So then, you know, how you make the walls there and stuff like that. You know, the walls hold up the ceiling and they give an opportunity that you can either have something solid, you can have an opening, you can have a window, you can have a door, you can have shelves, you can have, you know, so many things. The wall can do that because that's what it does in the spiritual world. So therefore, you use it for Krishna. It's not that it's different. What's different is our consciousness. We're seeing it as you know, a possibility for my enjoyment rather than the possibility for Krishna. If we see it as Krishna's enjoyment, how does Krishna want to enjoy it? I look at it as my enjoyment. How do I want to enjoy it? But because I'm looking from how I'll enjoy it, I can't appreciate how Krishna would enjoy it. Right? The two get in the way of each other. Like Prabhupada said, you have a glass of ink, you can't put milk in there. You throw out the ink and wash it, then you put the milk in, now you have a glass of milk. So when our brain is thinking, how am I going to enjoy this? We can't think, how will Krishna enjoy this? So as we get purified, then there's more of our brain thinking, how does Krishna enjoy this? And less of our brain thinking, how I'll enjoy that. And if we work on the part, how Krishna enjoy, we can engage that. Or in those things we can see connected to Krishna. We like things in the temple room, we generally see connected to Krishna. So it's easy to use for Krishna. But the things in our living room, we may or may not see in relation to Krishna, depending upon our purity and consciousness. Does that make sense?
Very wonderful, Maharaj. Very nice.
Oh, okay.
Relevant.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So now, a few more minutes. But that. Okay. So then, where are we? Yeah. The universe itself is kept at a distance from the Swarup of the Lord. It means his form and his Swarup Shakti, right? Both. That's why you have Swarup means his form, and Swarup Shakti means the energy of that form. By the use of the descriptive word itarataha, different, since the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe is different from the Lord's Swarup Shakti. Cha indicates it is non-different from the Maya Shakti, right? So that's it. The Swarup Shakti then transforms into the Maya Shakti. So that's the same, what we see, that's there. But it originated in the Swarup Shakti, the Swarup Shakti in Krishna's Swarup, his form. So that's how it's expanding. Thus, anvayad itarata cha means the Lord is the creator, maintainer, and destroyer, since he is non-different from the universe in its phases of creation, maintenance, and destruction. But this universe is different from his Swarup, and non-different from his Maya Shakti, right? He is the creator of that, since he is non-different from the universe in its phases of these things, but it's manifest through his Maya Shakti, right? But the point is it's different from his Swarup and non-different from the Maya Shakti. The Maya Shakti is expanding from his Swarup Shakti, which is expanding from him. So in other words, the primary is the Swarup, the secondary is the Maya Shakti, but it's all based on him. Therefore, he's the controller of all of it. It is him, but at the same time, he's separate because he's the primary. He's the origin of the primary. right? Just like Prabhupada in one place is describing how Krishna, the spiritual world, spiritual expands from Krishna. That means Krishna is beyond spiritual. He's the origin of spiritual, right? In other words, there is Krishna as Brahman. Then there's his internal potency as Brahman. Then there's the external potency as Brahman. And then in between the internal and external, there's the Jiva as Brahman. Right? So it's all Brahman, that he's the original Brahman. Right? So that means he's different from the internal potency. But at the same time, he's non-different because he's the source. His Sarupa is the basis. So this is the point of that the original philosophy in the Vedas is the Chinta Veda Veda Tattva. Right? But it takes more the Lord revealing that. So in the beginning we see then the Lord is revealing the Dwait Advait, that there's the two, then the Vishishta Dwait, then Vishuddha Dwait, then Vishishta Dwait, then Dwait, to clear out everything, and then finally back to Achinta Veda Veda Tattva. Right? So with that you can see how it is him, but at the same time it's not. Right? His Shakti is non-different from him, but at the same time he's different. But he's interacting with his Bhagawan, with his Sarup Shakti. But as Paramatma, he's dealing with the Maya Shakti. Right? And Brahman is giving the basis. From Brahman is the basis on which the Maya Shakti appears to have existence. Right, like that. So it's different, but it's non-different, but different. And then there's two phases of the difference: the internal potency, the external. Right. So one's primary, one's secondary, and then the jiva can be an instrument in dealing with this. Yes, does that make sense? Thus, in the first line, the two. Thus, in the first line. Of the two, I guess, of the two Vedanta Sutras, Janmadyasya 112 and Tattu Samanvayata 113 have been spoken. Footnote 1. Janmadyasya Yataha means Brahman is he from whom everything emanates. Means everything's based on Brahman. It's all coming from him. It's not coming from anywhere else. In other words, he is Sarva Karana Karanam, the cause of all causes, right? Right, means there's a cause, but he's the cause of that cause, right? Because you can say, well, where's his cause? There's always that individual with a false ego much greater than his intelligence, and he'll say, I've defeated. But the point is it is a logical fallacy of the circular, just keeps going around and around. There's no end to it. Infinite regression is called. And so I'm not sure what the original Latin is, but whatever it is, that's there. And so that's a fault. That means there has to be an end. So therefore he's the cause of all causes. So it ends with him. He's the beginning of it. There isn't something before. If you say there's something before, that keeps going on in infinity. Therefore, there's no answer. Therefore, it's not logical. It's a fallacy, right? The Lord is simultaneously the material, efficient, formal, and final cause, right? So those are the four we were talking about. Material energy is what we see. Why it's in this order means I was explaining with the efficient at the end because I'm showing how it's expanding. But the point is you have the final cause, the formal cause, the efficient, the living entities, but they are turned away from Krishna, so they end up in the material nature. So we see material nature, then we think, I want to do something with this. So the material nature is the material cause, and we is the efficient cause, then we take part in the transformation through our desire. But it's based on the principles of the formal cause that is stemming from the original cause or the final cause, which is Krishna. Right. So generally, when you see it, you see material, efficient, formal, and final. Right. Tattu Samanvayat means Lord Vishnu is the sole topic of discussion in the Vedas, and this is confirmed by all scriptures. Right. Means Tattu Samanvayat. It's about him. Right? That's how it's starting. So how the Mayavadis get something else, they'll take it, okay, Brahman. So yes, Brahman is the basis. Everything's about Brahman, like that. But the point is it's that's just the Brahman feature, the Sat feature of Vishnu. So you have Sat, Chit, and Ananda. They only take, they interpret the whole Vedanta Sutra through only Sat, only through Brahman. So they're missing out on Chit and Ananda. So therefore, it's going to be difficult from, that's why Shankaracharya doesn't actually give commentaries on most of the verses in Vedanta Sutra. He picks a few of them that you could only apply that angle of Sat on, you know, that is talking about the situational, and then he makes a comment. And then his point is, like this, you go on speculating, you know, or analyzing, because you can't actually comment on those others, because you need the knowledge of Chit and Ananda to be able to do it, and they don't have it. So that's why, you know, it said, you know, they come to bewilder the atheists, right? So both Buddha and Shankaracharya came to bewilder the atheists, because, you know, they'll follow it. As the Lord states in Bhagavad Gita, quote, by all the Vedas, I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. Right? So that's the whole point there. So then the Acharya is, you know, pointing out that that's the first line. The two Vedanta Sutras, Janmadhyasyayataha and Tattu Samanvayat, have been spoken. Right? So here is also, you can see, is that they're bringing out the point that if Bhagavatam being the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra, they're not, it's not, we're not just saying that, you know, just to kind of get, you know, bring Vedanta, you know, we're Bhagavatam and kind of, you know, people, intellectuals into Vedanta Sutra. So kind of bring it in with us stuff, you know, kind of include it with us, you know, we're buddy buddy and hey, we've been knowing each other a long time. No, they're pointing out how it's exactly commenting on that. This is the meaning of these words, and this Bhagavatam verse is then explaining it like that. So for one Vedanta Sutra, so many verses in Bhagavatam will discuss it and show different angles that are there within that one sutra. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, so that's the end of that section. So I think it's a good place to stop, because otherwise once you start the next, then it'll have its own analysis, right? So are there any other questions or that? Otherwise, then. Yes, no, we're cool. Okay. So we'll stop here, and then we'll hopefully tomorrow we'll work a little bit better, you know, at the regular time, the Brahma Samhita. We'd like to thank Chandan Kumar Srivatsan, the cookie master who arranged the connections so we could have everything and all that. Jai. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, 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 Rama,